Do you like to be the first? Name of your sex tape? Well, if you like to be the first to listen to podcasts, you might want to check out our Patreon, because now we're offering a brand new membership tier called Name of Your Sex Tape. I couldn't help it, guys. I'm sorry. For £5 a month, you'll get an ad-free version of our weekly episode on a Tuesday, a full day earlier than its usual release. So you can be the very first to talk about how funny our guest was, how quickly you cracked the case, or how badly I answered a question. Plus, you'll get all the benefits of our regular tier, including our live Zoom records, a special shout out on the podcast, and if you really like to hear us talk, we've got an entire back catalog of extra content. Check it out on patreon.com/drunkwomensolvingcrime.
Name of your sex tape. Name of your sex tape.
Name of your sex tape.
Fancy coming along to see Drunk Women Solving Crime live?
Ooh, yes, please.
Why not join us for our monthly London residency at the marvellous Museum of Comedy? We've got monthly shows through to June.
Plus, every show is a double header, so you get to see us record not one, but two episodes with two fantastic guests.
You can find tickets on our website, drunkwomensolvingcrime.com.
Shows are selling out fast, so be quick.
Noice.
Noice.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Drunk women solving crime.
Drunk women.
Drunk women.
Drunk women.
Now it's time for Drunk Women Solving Crime.
This is Drunk Women Solving Crime. My name's Taylor Glenn, and I'm a writer and comedian. I'm joined by screenwriter Hannah George.
Hello.
As well as author and comedian Katie Wilkins.
Hello.
This is where beer meets breaking and entering, Prosecco meets perjury, and vodka meets vandalism. It's a true crime podcast with a twist of lime. Coming up on Drunk Women Solving Crime.
You know when you're on the tube and it stops at Green Park and the voice over says, exit here for Buckingham Palace? I always like picture the Queen going, oh, it's my stop.
God, I never feel alive, ever. Like, literally, someone has to shout in my face for me to feel anything other than, okay.
I'm just speaking into a microphone and I'm hammered.
Okay. Yeah, I might be about to ruin this.
Why?
Because I think my auntie's the one who put him in jail.
What?
Now it's time for Drunk Women Solving Crime.
Hello, listeners. We are Drunk Women Solving Crime. We are still remote. We are still enthusiastic. And we are very excited to introduce our guest for this episode. It is the multi-award-winning editor and broadcaster, Jo Elvin.
Hey. Sort of like looking behind me then to see who you're talking about. Thanks for having me. I just heard Drunk Women and I was in.
I love
it. We had you at Drunk Women.
Yeah, totally. Oh. Not even women, just drunk. Yeah.
We love you already. I think that always makes the best guests.
Yeah,
I like
cheers.
The title.
Cheers,
everybody.
Cheers, guys.
Virtual cheers.
Yep. Yes, another week of survival and moderate drinking. Very moderate drinking.
Yes.
Jo, there's one way we always kick off this podcast, and it is to ask the question, have you ever been the victim of a crime?
Well, fortunately for this podcast, yes. The most interesting one that's still... You know those things where you lie awake at night and you still think about it and want to go over it, and I don't understand fully what happened. But I did once get punched in the back by an old woman on the London Underground.
Oh, my God.
Whoa.
And it was... I sort of do laugh about it, but I can still get really upset about it. It's like ridiculous.
Yeah.
Basically, I was on the tube one morning in rush hour, which I don't miss. That's the one upside of this whole thing. This woman, as I got off this really packed tube, was sort of like walking I mean, once if someone clips your heels, but when they do it like the fourth time, and I sort of turned around and just sort of gave her a look like, you know, what are you doing? And she was about 4 feet high. And
oh my God.
She sidled up to me as we were about to get on the escalator and said, yes, well, and I had white jeans on. She said, yes, well, you will get your jeans dirty if you're going to shove people like you just shoved me. I was like, sorry, oh, what? What? She said, you shoved me out of the way to get off first. And I was like, oh, God. I mean, I would never. And I just said, oh, God, if I did do that, it was an accident. I'm really sorry. And she went, oh, yeah, right. And I at that point I was about to get on the escalator. I just said, oh, look, it was if it happened, it was an accident. I'm really sorry. And she went, I don't believe it. I said, you're insane. And as I got onto the escalator, she got up behind me and she hit me in the back so that I jackknifed. And I sort of turned around and said, what is your problem? And she said, wow. What are you going to do about it?
Oh my God.
Shit.
I've never sort of like encouraged somebody to drop kick an old woman. I hope that's where this is going.
This is like a film.
Can I just caveat this by saying, this happened a while ago. When I say old woman, she's probably the age I am now. I was about 30 and I think she was about 50. So, you know, when you're 30, everyone looks 50. You know? So,
I know.
And I have to make my peace that that's how everyone looks at me now. And I just sort of said, oh, my God. And so I started walking up the escalator and she followed me. And I could hear her clomping up behind me. And as I say, because she was a lot shorter than me. I'm a really fast walker. And she was like scurrying to keep up with me.
At her age as well. Oh, my God.
She was like walking beside me and like looking at me. And I said, you know, if that happened, it was a really packed tube. Maybe I got shoved onto you. I don't know what happened.
Yeah.
And she went, I'd like to punch you right now.
Oh, wow.
Said, you know what? I'd like you to punch me as well. And then we can go and see the transport police. Nice. And with that, she walked off. So then, but then I had to go and meet people. And I was sort of like on adrenaline.
Oh my God.
And I walked up the stairs. And as I got to the top of the next set of escalators, I felt my heart squeezing in my chest. And I thought,
I bet.
And I thought, oh, fucking great. Now I'm going to have a heart attack. Great. I had to go. It was like a short walk to the restaurant where I was meeting people. And I ordered a cup of tea. And I was the first one there. And I was... my hand was shaking as I was. I had to guide the mug to my mouth.
Oh my God.
And I still, I'm telling you, I'll never forget it. And about 3 months later, I saw her again on the tube.
No way.
So I was terrified. I just sort of like left her alone. I'll never forget her face.
Of course.
It's completely changed the way I interact on the tube. I do that thing where I sort of like contort my spine into croissant knots, just not to accidentally touch anyone. I honestly sometimes I lie awake at night and still think, I wonder what happened that made her so angry. I wonder what I accidentally did. Do you know what I mean? It was like, yeah,
this has got to be much more about
her. I was gonna say this is about
anything.
20 people before you,
I think, probably.
It's like about her father, it's not about you. Like, this goes deep.
I mean, we've all been furious with someone on the tube, but I've never actually hit someone.
But also, it's incredible to have that level of aggression at that time in the morning.
Yeah, like, yeah, it was.
Like, it's, you know, 9 p.m., maybe she's had a few drinks, but like, what the hell?
No, it was.
It was
bizarre.
What I was going to ask, like, I have so many questions about, because what's really crazy to me in a way is like, we all blow up, but then it sort of blows over. Like, you can't believe you've blown up and then you let it go. Like, she was persistent.
Yes.
So I just have to ask, because our listeners are probably wondering this, was this the queen? I'm like, who else is small and persistent and just won't give up? And I have to say, it's her match.
She wasn't, I mean, the queen is a bit of a style icon of mine. And I can't say that I would have said the same about this particular lady in her. You know, she had on a good scurrying loafer, like a scurry-friendly loafer. Yeah. Nice. She did scurry off into the direction of Green Park, so you might be onto something.
That'd be great. I love the idea that the queen just takes all her aggression out by pretending to be a woman on the tube. It's like, you fucking pushed me.
Forget whatever else we're talking about. You've just solved a crime.
You know when you're on the tube and it stops at Green Park and the voiceover says, exit here for Buckingham Palace? I always like picture the queen going, oh, it's my stop.
Yeah.
That just really helps her remember.
waking up as she's been reading 50 Shades of Grey.
Yeah.
Sort of like, oh,
she's like, oh shit,
that's oh me. Shit, punching women in white jeans on her way to get back to the palace. Yeah.
I never, ever, ever take pictures of strangers because I just think that's creepy unless they've like assaulted me and I need evidence or whatever.
This woman is a criminal.
One time I have was a woman that looked so much like the queen, but you know, she's just there on the Bakerloo line. And I was like, I just want to show my husband to be like, is
yeah.
it? And right as I took the picture, I was so subtle or so I thought, and she just made eye contact.
Oh God.
And I'm still not sure it wasn't
her. I think it was her.
Wow.
That's amazing.
It could be, and there could have been some plain clothes, like officers around.
The only time I've taken pictures of strangers is when, like, once when I was waiting to get off a plane, and you know, when you're waiting for the doors to open and people stand up, and this woman sat with her bum on my armrest so that it was sort of like I couldn't move because I was pinned in by her actual arse. Nice. So she doesn't know that I surreptitiously took a picture of her ass and bitched about it on Facebook.
Oh, and the other thing. Wow, this is just a rich story. Like, I'm so with you on the trauma, and it almost makes it worse that it was a tiny woman because you're like, I shouldn't feel this way, but it's like, it doesn't matter who does that to you.
I don't know. I imagine she kind of knew I couldn't really. I mean, and I wouldn't. In no scenario would I have hit back, but she kind of knows that I wouldn't.
Short woman syndrome. Mm.
She knows the optics are really bad if you knock her out for you.
Oh, that's why I can't wait to be old, man. I'm just going to kick ass.
Oh, and you'll get away with it.
Beat people up. I can't wait.
Yeah.
She literally said that. What are you going to do?
She did.
But the white jeans comment is so passive aggressive. Yeah, that one really bothers
she's
me.
She's so angry about so many things, and you were just there while she was angry.
Do you know what I hate about these altercations? It's like, because again, it's that fucking adrenaline that you feel for hours afterwards.
Oh, yeah.
Whenever anything like that happens to me, I'm always like, God, I never feel alive, ever. Like, literally, someone has to shout in my face for me to feel anything other than, okay.
Oh, God, can you imagine the rage that's going to be out there once we're all back in Corona Town?
That's an interesting thing, isn't it? Yeah. Because there's, a, you know, this is before Corona times, and I think people are going to be, I guess, rightly kind of, keep away from
now me. She'd just have to but lick it's... me and I'd be traumatized.
Yeah. Where you gonna do about it? Oh my God. Well, Joe, hopefully this is a moment to just sort of like get some of that power
just
back.
Feel like I feel a bit therapied. Yeah.
This is good. We always ask, what would you say to her if you had the opportunity? She's not going to say anything back. She's not going to do anything.
She's been arrested for GBA charges. She can't even see you.
Honestly, we didn't really even get to the nitty gritty of what she actually literally thought I did. It's a, like a great unsolved mystery to me.
Get the CCTV footage.
Yeah.
Bitch, nothing happened. What the fuck is your problem? Sorry, that's me. I've taken over. Yeah.
That's Katie putting some horrible words in your mouth.
I do. You know, I really felt this one.
I love it because on the day when I told people, no one gave a shit. So this is great.
Oh no, total sympathy. And look, if she happens to be one of our listeners, we love all our listeners. That's fine. Keep listening.
Except you.
Let us know. Yeah. Why the fuck did you do that, Queen? Why'd you do that, Queen?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's not cool.
Joe, thank you so much for sharing that with us. It's a harrowing story, but we appreciate you.
Thank you for letting me.
Now it's time for drunk women solving crime.
So now we've come to the middle section, which is my favorite body part. Myself, that old
mine
middle
too.
Section. I'm sitting here holding my lockdown rolls, so I'm just trying to like love them. I love my lockdown rolls. I'm just holding on to them.
My husband makes a lot of sourdough. That's all I'm saying. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, you're in a sourdough.
Oh, it's really boring. It's sorry. It's a bit overrated.
Yeah, no, me and my partner, we just fuck a lot. I mean, that's what now I'm joking. That's really not what we're doing.
Yeah. Sourdough is the new sex.
Hi,
yeah.
What?
They both have a crazy start, right?
You don't wish sourdough started lasted longer because that
although although it does look sort of like, you know, squidgy. And
I don't do sourdough. I didn't realize how like creepy that is. That's right out of Ghostbusters. Like, it looks like it could move. I'm not sure about that. So we reached the middle section and somehow that turned into my stomach and sourdough bread. But this is where we deconstruct a true crime case. So are we ready to begin? Of course we are, detectives.
Is now the right time to mention I'm not very bright?
That is the perfect time. You've come to the right place.
Welcome to the force. Yeah.
Sometimes the brighter guests are kind of
boring. Oh, okay, good. All right.
Just kidding. No. I'm sure you're going to be an asset to the force because everyone is. Everyone has their own skill.
Yeah.
So let's do this. Our case involves a man called Darcy Duggan, who was a lifelong robber.
Well, there's no jobs for life. That's great.
He was so secure. I didn't know what to call him because he kind of robbed everything. So I couldn't pen this guy in. He was like a freelance thief, if you will.
I'm impressed.
He would have found lockdown very difficult. So my first question, Darcy Duggan, lifelong robber, where are we?
I have to say, it sounds like an Aussie name.
Spot on, Joe.
I was going to go Old West, but yeah.
Spot on. And I was going to ask, have you ever heard of Darcy Duggan?
I'm not sure. It does ring a faint bell.
Cool.
What era am I allowed to ask that?
Of course you can. I was about to say, we are in Australia, specifically New South Wales, specifically, well, to start with, a suburb of Sydney. And Darcy's criminal career spans 48 years from about 1937 to 1985.
I might be about to ruin this.
Why?
Because I think my auntie's the one who put him in jail.
What?
Ruin it.
Oh my God.
Ruin it. You're about to make it the best fucking episode we've ever had.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't even know. Should I just rip up my notes? Should we just?
Well, I don't know the full story, but that wasn't a spooky guess. Oh yeah.
God.
Wow. Because that ruined
it. I have actual goosebumps and it's very warm in this room. So it's
my auntie Pat turned 84 this week.
Wow.
I might be wrong. I might still be wrong, but.
Let's do this just so we can still unravel it. And when. Yeah. I cannot recount his every crime because he was in jail so much. So when you think Auntie gets involved, please just say, shut up, Taylor.
Okay.
This is my story.
All right.
This is amazing.
Oh, that's amazing.
Fucking hell.
I love that you said I'm about to ruin
this. How embarrassing if I'm wrong, but how do you spell the last name?
D-U-G-A-N.
Yeah, see, in Australia, we'd say Darcy Duggan. Yeah.
Would you? Dude. Oh, fuck my Australian friend who said it's definitely Duggan. And was he just throwing me under a bus? Damn it. Darcy Duggan. Okay, Darcy Duggan.
Yeah.
Does that change things?
The better I get, the better my accent will be. Yeah.
We're counting on it. Right. Okay. Let's get cracking. This is all very exciting. So Darcy Duggan, is that better?
Yeah.
Darcy Duggan was born in 1920 in Sydney. His father, Ezekiel, was a mason and his mother, Noni, was a mother. I just felt like I should say that. She was kind of a freelance woman.
Yeah.
Yeah, she would have found lockdown very well. The family were strict Irish Catholics, and Darcy attended Catholic school. I left this detail out, but if it helps, he went to St. Benedict.
Oh, yeah.
I'm so excited that
profile him now.
Yeah. So Darcy began shoplifting as a child with his friend Lenny McPherson. It's always a Lenny, isn't it?
Or a Swiggy. An
accomplice.
Yeah.
Or a Swiggy. Nice one. Yeah, Lenny McPherson. Yeah. So Darcy soon becomes a juvenile cat burglar and he's fascinated with locks. So question, as a preteen, what do you think his favorite thing to steal was?
It's that information, like, is a juvenile cat burglar, like a...
Eddie.
Come on, Hannah.
That would be nice.
Everything's a burger with Hannah.
He's a preteen.
Yeah, as a preteen, he's shoplifting, what do you think he likes?
Cigarettes?
Very, very good guess. That's what
Razzle
I would have gone for.
Magazine or chocolate?
Razzle magazine or chocolate? Hannah, I want you to finish your question about cat burgers.
Well, the girls in my school, when they would steal things, they would steal gel pens. So is it gel pens in 1930s Australia?
Well, yes, although they were filled with mercury then.
Oh, yeah.
That's a great niche answer. I love that. It would be a hard one to guess. It was actually cosmetics.
Well, that's thrown me. That's not very Aussie male. Oh, yeah. Wow.
Is it the resale or is he curious?
Well, kind of. Very good question. It was a resale of sorts. He would sell it to a brothel owner who used them for her sex workers.
Oh, wow. Jesus. That's actually very Lord Sugary. I mean, that's like really entrepreneurial. Yeah.
It's very entrepreneurial.
Yeah. Yeah. It is.
Yeah. Yeah, this guy fascinates me because just when you think you have him figured out, you're like, huh. So there are just some interesting turns, and that was the first one.
Sorry, Taylor, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, we both interrupted each other.
Female workplace.
But preteen, so he's 12 at the oldest, and he's flogging stolen cosmetics to a brothel.
Yes.
Okay, this guy's, you know, ahead of his years.
I was going to say, like, when I was 10, I did not know where the brothel was.
Well, you know, you learn in Catholic school.
Actually, good point. Catholics rebel.
Oh, man, don't they just...
I'm sweeping generalization.
I feel bad because we keep having these cases where, like, and they were Catholic, and it's like, because you just want to sprinkle a bit of color, but there's been a lot of, yes, we could look into that. He would sell them to the brothel. His first arrest and conviction happens when he's caught stealing from his uncle's hotel when he is 17 years old, and he is sent to the Gosford Farm Home for
Boys. Oh, yeah. Sorry, yeah. I'm familiar with it. But this is how I grew up in Sydney.
Amazing.
Oh, wow. I might have picked a case that you might have known about, but I didn't know you
did. Did you? Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Well, every once in a while, sometimes it's just... coincidental, we'll pick a case and somebody's like, oh yeah, I know this because of this.
I promise, I know the sketchiest details about this guy, and but I'll tell you more as and when.
I'm gonna leave a space. I'm gonna make a note, space for Joe. We'll cut out 18 details that I've written down.
This is fascinating though.
So Gosford Farm Home for Boys, this sets off a pattern which Darcy's gonna repeat again and again and again. What do you think that pattern is? And I'll give you a hint. It's a bit Shawshanky.
Oh, he escapes.
I thought it was just being an amazing businessman, because if he's got ideas on that level every single time,
he's got a market for,
you're hired.
He's not just a robber. He's a real, like, as we've said, entrepreneur.
And he obviously, if he sort of like started stealing preteen and was caught and convicted the first time at 17, he had in his formative years thinking, I'm on a sweet deal here.
Yeah, that's 7 years of learning, refining without getting caught at all.
Yeah.
It's not failure, it's feedback.
Quite.
Absolutely. Yeah, he's quite an escape artist, like to a ridiculous degree. But the other bit of it, which is obviously quite dark, is that you can imagine during this era, these places were horrible. He suffered a lot of mistreatment, a lot of abuse at all of these detention centers. And this becomes just this never-ending repeat pattern where he gets arrested, gets abused, he escapes, repeat.
Wow.
And we will come
back. Well, now I'm starting to hate my Auntie Pat for putting him in jail. Yeah.
Well, it's never black and white, is it? Don't hop to the hatred. So this first escape is from the Gosford Farm Home for Boys. I mean, just when you thought that sounded like a really lovely place where you could pet the sheep, it's really not. So he escapes with a friend. They manage to stay away for 3 weeks, but they get caught because they're begging for food and they inadvertently beg a plainclothes police officer who spots their prison number etched into their boots.
Oh, shit.
And turns them in.
Wow.
Yeah. So this is just from a newspaper clipping headline. This is one of the most publicized criminals that Australia has ever seen. Like, there are just so many articles, sensationalized articles.
What year are we in now? Sorry.
So we're still in just the 1930s at this point. He's in his 20s. Did I do the maths right there? No, we're sort of veering into the 40s now. So newspaper clipping headline, Darcy Dugan, boy hoodlum. At 17, he had been in and out of reformatories many times and was the despair of child welfare officials. His incredible activity in crime is best indicated by his plea of guilty while less than 18 years old to no fewer than 96 charges of breaking and entering and stealing in 1 year.
Wow.
I'm not a thief, but that's a lot. That's busy. That's a full-time job.
I'll say one every 3.5 days.
That's dedication.
I mean, that is dedication.
That's harder than just a job.
It sounds harder to me. Like Hannah said, though, he must have felt alive all the time.
Yeah.
So question, what does he spend most of his money on?
Food.
Reasonable.
More makeup. Yeah.
Also,
yeah, he's investing
guess.
Back into the
company. Yeah, he actually started Revlon.
Is it something like transport?
The face of Revlon, Darcy Dugan.
Yeah, he was so James Charles before James Charles was a thing.
Is it something like travel? Did he try and get away from? Is that what he spent his money on?
Oh, he wants to move away. That's good.
That is a great, all great answers. The answer is clothing.
Now I can relate to Darcy. Yeah. Now me and Darcy could be pals. Yeah.
He is a bit of a dedicated follower of fashion. Another quote from a newspaper. His father kept the youth well-dressed, and Darcy had become clothes-conscious. He spent a lot of his stolen money on buying the best clothes at 21, young Dugan was familiar with the inside of Long Bay Jail, but he was still fond of expensive
clothes. Wow. I mean, and that's actually not very Australian male. Ooh. It's just not. I mean, not even now, really. There's just like, I think the beachside cultures, I think nobody really cares so much about all that stuff.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
We can't box this guy in.
I know. Wait, because there's another bombshell.
Yeah.
I'm very excited to share one of his mugshots.
Oh, I can't just wait because I've never seen this guy.
He looks exactly like a certain actor, and I was trying to pin it down. It's very Woody Harrelson, but it's a little bit... It's actually like one of the actors in Shawshank Redemption. So yeah, we'll share the photos. And yeah, man, he just has this look. He's got this look. So in 1942, after he's released from this time Oberon prison farm, why are they all farms?
I think that's just a euphemism for like, you know, sort of like low level security. So I wasn't surprised that he escaped from Gosford Boys Farm because I used to live quite near a prison farm and there were always people escaping and now we were never scared or anything.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Really? Interesting.
Was it kind of just a low security, like, so the people that went there, like, you know, stole makeup, so they weren't...
Exactly. Sort of and scary. It's like, it's detention and you have to stay and, you know, it's things like it would probably be somewhere where you would be made to work on the vegetables and all of that sort of stuff.
Free labor on the
but
farm.
It wasn't like
okay, yeah.
But it was low level security compared to Long Bay Jail is like the big hairy jail.
That's what I gathered from the way that quote was, and you started this off by saying you weren't very bright. Look at your contributions, detective Joe Elvin.
You know, this is my homeland. This is this is like, yeah.
If we're talking prisons, I'm from the Isle of Wight, and we've got like a kind of high security prison. But we had like the craze and shit.
Great.
Like the craze were on the Isle of Wight. You know, there was some properly hardcore. But it's interesting that the difference between, you know, just the high security and. And and the farm.
Yeah.
Parkhurst Farm, does it
feel? I mean, where I grew up, most weeks there'd be a helicopter circling and just my mother or my father would go, oh, someone must have escaped from the prison farm again.
Amazing.
Be back for dinner.
This is such good insight because I was like, why are they all called farms? Yeah. And that they were still going when you were a kid. Like, wow.
Ooh, and they would go on day release to, like, you know, work at jobs and places and sometimes they wouldn't go back. You know,
I got a better offer. Would you believe it? So it's now 1942. And when he's released from Oberon Prison Farm, thank you for the insight into that. He decides to try to clean up his act a little bit and he does something. What does he do in 1942?
Oh, he joins the army.
Spot.
Oh, I was gonna
He enlists, Katie. Well done. It's 1942. He's posted to another town to train as a sapper, which is basically, I didn't know what that was.
No, I don't think I know what that is either.
It's a soldier who, it's almost like a handyman soldier or even an engineer. Like they lay mines, they repair railroads, they're really hands-on. So in theory, this should have suited him very well because he's really interested in locks and mechanics and filling stuff. So sounds like the perfect job for Darcy. How long do you think he stuck with it?
6 hours.
What?
6 hours.
Yeah. So yeah. He completes his training and then quits on the job.
He completes some brief like basic training, okay. And then he's stationed in this other town, which I have not written.
He realizes that the uniform sucks and.
Yeah. So we've got 6 hours.
The Nazis, they were designed by Hugo Boss, weren't they? Was it the Nazis?
Yeah.
Because you don't want to turn up to a fight and then see some guys dress better than you if you're into fashion. So.
Well, they were more about, they fought the Japanese who weren't quite stylish. So, yeah.
Right. Well, yeah. I think I would give him, well, it's got to be less than sort of 2 or 3 years because obviously the war ends. Mm. So I'm going to give him, I'm going to give him 6 years. Months.
6 months. Six months. It's got to be less than
6 months. And
with
Katie Wilkins?
3 years into the war. Mm-hmm. So now he'd be technically a deserter, right, as well? Well, no, he's not really on the front lines, though. He's still in Australia. Okay, I'm going to go 6 days just to keep the six.
Yeah. I love the six. I thank you for that. My OCD loved that.
666.
It's not your OCD, Taylor.
I'm sorry. By OCD, I meant Satanism. Yeah. I get so confused. Drunk women solving crime.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
He makes it just over a month, which almost sounds like, wow, he tried. It was almost enough. But yeah, he fucks off after a month.
I'm the closest.
Yeah, well done.
You're the closest. Yeah. I'm sorry, Katie, yeah. I should have pointed that out. And along the way, just for good measure, he commits a burglary. So he's dishonorably discharged from the army and he spends more time in jail. Now, in between incarcerations, Darcy does something else on the side to make money. And this is my favorite fun fact of this entire case. What do you think he does on the side to make money?
I'm trying to think of something super random and Australian.
Yeah, he like starts selling surfboards.
Yeah.
That's a really good guess. It's definitely an outside of the box sort of thing. HG, any gut feels?
I for some reason, I don't know why, I think could he do some kind of cooking? Could it be like he starts a kind of food van, a food truck before food trucks are a thing?
Ooh, nice. These are all really good guesses. I would have been shocked if you had just landed on this, but he teaches ballroom dancing.
Oh, wow.
Well, we should have got that because there's that film, isn't there? Yeah.
Right. So he's teaching ballroom.
When did he learn? Like, he kept that under his hat. What?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it must have just been part of his upbringing.
My uncle went on a cruise with his husband, and my uncle was in his 70s, but my uncle was a great ballroom dancer, and he like did ballroom dancing with all the old ladies who are like mostly widows. He'd sort of like, you know, dance them around the ballroom.
Wow.
And then a guy from the cruise line came up to him and said, "You can have any free cruise you want if you just come back and dance with the old ladies."
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Did he say yes?
Like, wow. Do you know what? I think he carried on paying because he just didn't want to have to. He wants to do it when he wants to do it.
I'm your private dancer.
Right? A ball dance for money. Wait, a ball dance is a very different thing. You need the room in there. You got to keep the room in.
Still work.
When did he learn ballroom dancing?
Yeah.
It's a really good question. I don't have that to hand, but not only did he teach ballroom dancing in various studios across Sydney, he even won a ballroom dancing competition when he was in his 20s.
Oh my God.
This guy is fascinating. There's so much
Yeah.
amazing potential there. And it's just me.
Yeah, there's so much.
It just shows you as if you're steered the right way or the wrong way.
Honestly, I feel like society let this guy down. He had so much to offer.
Yeah.
He had to do crime.
He'd be on Strictly Come Dancing now, wouldn't he? That would be
Yeah.
Or he would be like a Timpson employee. Like either way, there'd be a solid situation, right? He'd be good. He'd be looked after. Oh, Timpson is awesome. Big ups, Timpson.
Yeah, they're not even sponsoring back, Taylor. Us.
They're amazing. Give him some free press right there. Press. It's not press. I'm just speaking into a microphone and I'm hammered. Okay.
Yes, I'm getting there.
So, yeah, he can't stop stealing. We know that. Two of his most famous jailbreaks happened in the mid to late 1940s after he's fucked off from the army. So the first is when he's being transported by tram alongside several other prisoners. How do you think he escapes a tram?
Jumps off the tram?
How does one do that?
Just gets up and jumps off?
Yeah, they don't move very
fast. It's not like a tourist tram where it's open. It's not like an open trolley where you get to see the city.
In a laundry or a catering trolley.
Ooh. Mm. Very nice plan.
Does he have a thing running along the side like the tram, like another car? You know, like they do sometimes in a movie when there's a train and they'll jump off into another car. Down. I think he's done a thing with two things.
That's a thing with two things. Yeah.
Like using his engineering.
Don't get technical.
Yes. Well, I mean, it's a hard one to answer, but it's kind of remembering that at this time there's just security detail is there is none. So he has a knife with him.
Okay.
It's a serrated knife. He manages to cut a hole in the ceiling. He gets another prisoner to like create a diversion. And the hole is tiny because he doesn't have that much time to do it before somebody notices. And I guess it's a soft enough top that he can do it. I had the dimensions written down and then actually I was like, don't give dimensions, give the equivalent. So I found out that the hole that he cut was the same size as a basketball. So question, could you fit through that? And I'm going to put myself out there. No, I couldn't. I would have my head out the tram, like, look at the
you
world.
You haven't shown us a picture yet. I mean, I'm starting to think this guy could be like the villain in Batman. Do you know what I mean? He could like wear a cape and like, sort of like, I'm the Riddler as he sort of like ran out. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like,
He's got that going for him.
Yeah.
I feel like if I had just won the ballroom dancing competition, I might be able to fit through it.
Good point. He's fit.
I'm dressed a bit like a basketball tonight. I've got the exact same colours on. So
I don't think that, that might not help, though.
Wait, what?
I don't think that's how it works.
Well, that is a shame, because I've just been dressing for the hole I want to get through.
You, Hannah.
I just go to such little details where I'm like, oh, it must have been so sharp. Like,
yes, really serrated.
He scraped the fuck out of himself. And I guess when you want to escape, like, you'll take those chances, but I'm just like...
But also, just thinking of using a serrated knife to cut through the metal, that's giving me that nails down a chalkboard feel.
Oh, no.
That would have sounded terrible. Mm.
Now, he actually escapes with another, apparently very thin, very slender friend.
Or just very slashed friend.
Yeah, a lot of cuts on this guy. Yeah.
They make a run for it, but he's spotted. So this guy is brilliant at escaping, but he is so shit at blending in. Like, he just never lasts.
I feel like his career started pretty well, and now he's like in a bit of a rut with getting captured again.
You know, he's too confident, isn't he?
That's his game.
He's too brazen.
Well, there's that. Mm. Yeah, absolutely. So his second famous escape was from a prison transport van. This time, I'll just tell you about it. He's whittled a screwdriver into a knife, so it's very sharp. That's what the kids call a shank. I watch programs. And he just cuts through the mesh that's holding him in and he jumps out the back. So some very dramatic escapes.
I love the idea that when he was like at prison, he kind of like, there was like classes and it's like, well, you can either do shank making or ballroom. And he was like, I'm going to do a bit of both.
He used his time
in prison really well.
You can't pigeonhole me. Really. Yeah.
No, don't pigeonhole him. You can't fence him in.
I'm every woman. Yeah. It's all in me. Okay. That's what that song's about. It's about shanks and ballroom.
Yeah. And how they go together.
And how they go right together. He also, there's so many anecdotes, but he escaped from a jail cell by removing the grill at the top and jumping down a 20-foot wall. He escaped through the bathroom ceiling of another prison and scaled the walls at Long Bay. He escaped from Long Bay.
Wow.
And that's where he had experienced some of the most inhumane treatment.
Oh, no.
From the prison guards. But he's so, it's so frustrating because you read it and he's so clever. One time he used wet bread, stuffed it through the lock in his cell so he could make a mold of the lock and whittled a screwdriver over weeks until it fit into the lock and let himself out.
What?
Wow. His own cell. Like he's
why did they make a film about Alcatraz when they could have done this?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you know what? I would have eaten that bread almost immediately.
Well, yeah.
Second day. Yeah. I'd have been like, oh, come on. I need a snack.
And so I think we're getting a portrait of a very slender man here, aren't we? Who can fit through basketball size holes and can forego bread.
And say no.
Yeah. And say no to carbs. I need that to be a lock.
Yeah. It was always going to come back to the sourdough. So a quote from him, "I hardly ever encountered a locking device I would not beat," he once said. I mean, pretty smug, but it's like, yeah, but how are you at like staying out
yeah
of jail,
why don't you then bro. Run a bit further this time.
I don't mean to throw shade at Darcy because I quite like him, but
right, I think a lot of prisoners, they actually, you know, they want to go back to jail, don't they? That's the thing. It's like, and it's interesting that he joined the army. I think the structure,
you think he's got institutionalized
a little bit. Probably
it's those ballroom lessons he just wanted to go to the
that's structure as well, isn't it?
Very interesting stuff. Now he eventually receives a much harsher sentence than usual following a bank robbery.
Ooh. Oh, here we go.
Oh, is this auntie?
Is this auntie?
I don't know
Pat?
Why, but I was like, this is where auntie's going to come in. So take it away.
Well, all I know is, and I wish I had all the detail, but this is like, this is elven folklore. But basically my auntie, who was, she must have been quite young herself. She must have been like late teens and had like a Saturday girl job, or, you know, sort of like worked in a department store, and she just happened to be a witness to him being in the place where she was the key state witness that put him in prison, because she was able to identify that he was the one who was at the scene of the crime.
That's incredible.
She was she was absolutely terrified, because it's so funny hearing this background to him, because the way my father tells it, my father's one of six. He's the youngest. My auntie Pat, the woman in question, is the oldest.
Oh, okay.
And my father talks about it like she put Al Capone away. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, he's this sort of like big underworld figure, and she was really worried for her life, and, you know, was worried about being a witness, and the police had to talk her into it and all this.
Jeez.
And he sounds so crap the way you're, you know what I mean? It's like, it's sort of like, I've got goosebumps, but I'm also slightly disillusioned, because I thought she literally put away this massive underworld figure. But no, but she was the key witness. Curious. Yeah.
Wow.
But I mean, amazing. I don't have to tell somebody who's worked in media as long as you have. It's all about how you tell the story.
Yeah.
And we tell family stories, and I'm telling a story now, and I've.
But I feel like you're going.
You know, he's the whimsical ballroom
dancer. You're going to tell me much more about this than I already know.
Oh, I don't think so. I mean, if this was the moment where she was present, which makes sense, because it was a bank
robbery. Her name is Patricia Ulrich. So I don't know if she's mentioned in there, but yeah.
And you know what? There's a lot coming up where I can see how it would be kind of scary to go against this guy, because he became quite popular in the media. He was popular figure.
Well, like people that escape.
That's the thing about the Aussies. In Australia, everybody knows who Ned Kelly is. I kind of figure nobody over here knows, but Ned Kelly was a gangster, a murderer, a rapist, you know, the whole thing. But he is celebrated in ye olde folklore as some sort of outlaw hero. And there is that horrible anti-hero thing that happens.
No, of course, of course, because they beat the system or whatever.
Yeah, so there's probably a bit of that going on. I mean, my father and my auntie are going to get such a kick out of this.
Shout out to Auntie Pat.
Yes. So he receives a harsher sentence after this bank robbery. Why is his sentence more harsh than he's used to, than the standard few years?
I could be totally wrong about this, but I what's ringing a bell is I think it's got something to do with somebody important being hurt, or Something like that. Somebody in government was personally affected by this, and that's as far as I can.
That's good. See, I was going to guess weapons. I was going to guess he had worse weapons or something.
I could be making that up. Yeah.
No, that totally. That's a really good.
And
reason.
Sadly, it does make sense, doesn't it? That like when somebody important is affected, like, it's like.
Well, Taylor's probably just going to say I'm totally wrong. But yeah.
No, I think you're right, Joe. I was saying before you said your guess, that was what my guess was, but I think your guess is right.
For the most part, I mean, yes, robbery is a violent crime in and of itself, but up until now, no one has really been hurt that we know of, but this time, and it's actually not him, it's his accomplice shoots somebody in the back.
Right.
Right.
I have that it's a clerk. That was just from one source. It could have been somebody.
No, I knew there was violence involved, but I couldn't remember. Okay. Yeah.
So this is the first injury / death, is it? He's crossed a line, basically.
Well, at least that he's been caught for. And so, again, it's his accomplice, but he's there.
Yeah.
And
he's
the
got
clerk,
the rap sheet.
Yep. And the clerk does not die, but they are both charged with attempted murder,
right.
And he is sentenced to death.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Oh, wow.
So suddenly we've gone from sort of, here's another stint, I'll just break out, to death penalty. So next question, is he actually put to death?
No.
I feel like he isn't.
I can't remember.
He's got to have one more escape left in him. Also, is this the sixth? When did Australia end the death penalty?
They haven't, I don't think. No, I don't. No, I'd like to hope he didn't get the death penalty for that.
He does not, because what happens is a Labour government is voted in around this time, and they actually reduce his sentence to life imprisonment.
Okay.
Those woolly Liberals letting him luxuriate in an abusive setting for the rest of his life. Wasted our tax dollars. But yeah, so a change of government leads to this change in his sentence, but also a campaign is launched to free him. So,
wow.
By this poor time, Auntie Pat. Media...
Oh no, she was vilified.
She was so brave, Auntie Pat.
Yeah,
seriously,
he still
I'm
broke
saluting.
The law, like,
absolutely. It's very. Have a drink with Auntie Pat. Let's have her on. I want to hear her side.
If you think I don't shut up, you ain't seen nothing. Yeah.
That's my favorite kind of woman. So a campaign is launched to free him. Petitions are signed. Eventually, he's released early. And some of that has to do with some religious figures get involved and sort of advocate for him. Yeah, so it's this funny, like, fan club question. Is Darcy done with crime after he evades the death penalty?
No.
Is he? But, like, I think he really tries, and just the world isn't good. Like, he can't get what he wants or what he needs keeping clean.
I don't know. I think he's been at this for a very long time. He likes it.
Yeah, he does probably like it too.
Yeah. He likes that rush that I never get from anyone. No.
If you want, I'll come around and punch you in the back.
I've got my white jeans ready.
Oh, only a good friend would punch you in the back.
Yeah.
To make you feel alive.
Punch me above my white jeans.
Guys, I just feel really connected to you right now. That's right. I'm at that level of wine where I feel like we're really good friends.
Cheers.
Okay.
Cheers.
Yes.
Right. Of course he's not. Cheers. Of course he's not done with crime. He robs a jewelry store and he does more time.
Oh, Darcy.
And look, ad nauseum, he escapes. He's caught. He's transferred to like 5 different facilities. They're all tired of him because he escapes and they get him and they're like, eh. So he's doing the tour.
Yeah.
De prison. And he even goes on hunger strike at one point to protest the treatment he's received.
Well, he ballooned up to 60 kilos. So, you know.
Yeah, you'd have to cut like a beach ball out of the thing to get him out. Yeah. Like,
someday I'll get back to my basketball whole week.
Yeah. I want that you basketball body ready.
We're in the 60s now, just to kind of bring us along the decades. And even though he's in and out of prison, Darcy begins to get active in something new. What is that?
Breakdance.
Breakdance.
I mean, credible guess.
I'm about 22. It's about 20 years too early, but
yeah, he was ahead of his time.
It's, it's the 60s.
Yeah.
The 60s.
Hula hooping. Well, that started. Space hopping.
I mean, you know, he's slaying that anyway.
But like,
he's kicking that in the dick.
Political activism.
Katie, are you correct again. Yeah, he basically becomes a campaigner for prisoners' rights.
We'll see, that does make sense. He's a freaking expert and he's clever.
Yeah, he starts telling his story. You know, the times they are a changing. He's talking about his treatment. And all of this helps with prison reform in Australia. Slowly,
okay,
but surely. He starts counseling other prisoners. He's speaking at events.
Man.
Yeah, and his testimony to the Royal Commission into the New South Wales prisons in 1977 is what led to really big changes into the treatment of inmates in Australia.
Oh my God, that's huge.
Yeah.
Yeah, my family don't talk about that so much.
But you know what, though? Your family facilitated that happening.
Yeah, if anything, it was a great thing that he went to prison again.
It was part of his journey.
Look, if there's one thing I'm not going to let happen, Pat is the hero in the story.
Yeah, Auntie Pat was really brave, and he totally fucking nearly killed a clerk. So, like, that's on
him. This is how, I mean, come on. I don't mean to get too groovy, but this is how nuanced life is, right? Like, he ends up doing good because bad happened, and he still does. But, like, life is just not black and white.
He doesn't seem like a terrible person.
It's so great to hear.
Yeah.
Like, because this is genuinely the most nuanced case we've had in terms of the information that we've had. Like, we have, like, oh, they had to live with their uncle after their mum died, but we never have the fucking ballroom dance.
Yeah.
This is incredible. We can really...
We've also never had somebody that actually my auntie said.
Yeah, I know, that's true. This is incredible.
So we're nearing the end of the case. I mean, so much happens. This guy has a very rich... very rich life. In 1980, Dugan is released. Every time I say that, I feel like I'm saying Doogie Howser.
Dugan!
I'm like, Doogie Howser. In 1980, Dugan is released after yet another stint, having spent more than half his life in jail.
Wow. Wait, so he does mass prison reform, and then he goes back into prison.
Mate, he's still totally living.
Well, he made it so good that he wanted to go back. Yeah.
I was like, let me just check. Is it proper food now?
Yeah. Now it's like the Four Seasons, thanks to Darcy Dugan. So he's back in there.
Yeah. Like, I'm an undercover police.
Actually, he's like Norm from Cheers. They're just like, Darcy. Yeah.
He's actually a very selfish man.
Yeah.
He's like, I plan to spend a lot more time here. It better be good. Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing in the outside world that can equal whatever is driving him to repeat this pattern, and that's why psychology fascinates
me. It's incredible.
He can't break his break addiction. Yeah, so he's released after another stint. He spent half his life in jail, and something else happens in 1980. What do you think that something
was? Oh, he becomes a dad.
That's close. When that
he discovers punk.
Oh, yeah, it's 1980.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
Katie, you're not far off just in that boring domestic sense that we connect these all together. He gets married.
Oh, wow. To who?
Yeah. He gets married to a woman whose brother has also been in and out of jail. So she's a bit of a fangirl. Is it happily ever after with this woman? Let me ask that in a less loaded way.
Say yes. Yeah.
Well, no. So he gets married in 1980. He's arrested in 1981 for attempted armed robbery.
Oh,
well, he's going to be bored by a marriage to this lady. I mean, like, they probably connected for a minute because she's like, my brother's like you. And he's like, yeah, I'm like me. And
then what else? Yeah.
Well, they could do ballroom dancing. I mean.
And they probably did for 1 year only. Once a freelance thief, always a freelance thief. So they separate, but they stay very good friends. And then the story comes to an end following a stroke. He dies peacefully in 1991 at the age of 71. But, you know, I had this whole toast, which was sort of, may all of our troubled lives lead to positive change. But I'm going to say, here's to Auntie Pop.
Here's to Auntie Pop.
Yes.
As I say, she's rocking it. Oh, yeah.
Wow. Happy birthday, Auntie Pop.
Go,
happy
Auntie
birthday, Auntie Pat, the secret hero of
and
our
I have
story
to say what's touched me about this is like, I know that, you know, she was very, very fearful when that happened, but obviously he bore no malice, you know, do you know what I mean? It was like he was he never kind of contacted her, or she never felt traumatized afterwards. So it was just that little moment that, you know, they kept the clippings from when she was in the paper because she was the witness.
That's so exciting.
Oh my goodness, you have clip-ins. I'm just a little bit too excited about it.
It's amazing. It's so
I haven't thought about Darcy Dugan in so long, but now I'm going to go and Google him.
Yeah. Oh, get that picture.
Yeah.
See what 70 looks like.
Yeah.
I just have to say, none of this was set up. Like, I feel like we just set up this whole, like, hey.
But the more you say it, the more it sounds set up.
But what's fascinating as well is, like, we've had a few false starts with me coming onto this for various scheduling reasons and tech reasons. So I don't know if I'd done this 3 months ago when we first talked about it, would that have been the case? But it's just...
Yeah.
I have a habit of finding myself in weird coinkydink situations.
Is that another prison in Australia?
Quinky-dink. Quinky-dink. You're going to the quinky-dink clink.
Have sourdough bread there.
I think it's called the clink. No, it's the quinky-dink in Australia. Oh my
gosh. I honestly, this has tickled me in places I didn't know could be so exciting.
Drunk women solving crime.
So this was from an Apple Podcast review. Thanks for the 5 stars. It definitely didn't sway my decision to choose this crime, but it also did not hurt. So this is from Hint FHD. When I was a teenager, my twin sister and I used to get into huge arguments. I'm already so invested in this.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm just throwing that out there.
Drama right away.
Yeah. We used to get into huge arguments, and invariably, my parents would take the side of my sister. I'm the youngest.
By like 3 or 4 minutes, right?
Yeah. Well, and I know like friends who are twins, that's the big deal. Like, who was born first? I only paused on that just because I'm the youngest in my family, and that's the cliche of like, oh, you get away with everything. So it's interesting that she said, like, I'm the youngest. Maybe with twins, it's like the first one, you're like, yay, baby. And the second one, you're like,
with twins, the oldest one is sometimes just a bit more healthier than the younger one. So the parents are really excited. Like, the one that's born like 2 minutes earlier is sometimes like a fraction heavier, and maybe just like the first one to latch on, or like they do all the milestones like 1 second earlier, and the parents get really excited, like, oh, we're doing it right with this one. This one's really
healthy. Why do we need this other one? Yeah.
Well, or like, oh, I'm really connected to this one that's doing everything right. This one seems a bit harder. This one's like cries a bit more. Like, just because, like, you can't be the same parent to two babies. That one did it, and you can't be in two places at once.
So they end up not connecting. See, I was a nanny for twins, and this adds up just with that.
Oh, really? Yeah, because they just can't connect with that one, and then it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Wow, that's fascinating.
And it's no one's fault.
I think you've given me a feature idea.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Oh, we're just slaying life right now. This is great.
Yeah.
Also, I wish that, like, later in life, being the, like, the bigger, hungrier one was still an accolade. Like, no one gives me cred for that ever.
No, you're so healthy.
I'm so healthy and voracious.
And, like, when you latch on with your mum, she does not like it anymore.
Oh, good Lord. Oh, good Lord. I'm really embracing my curves, though. It's body positive, guys. It's
also
all body positive.
Everyone here right now is fabulous.
Sorry, I'm really sappy drunk, so I'm not going to even go on that monologue.
Let's hear the rest of this crime.
Holy shit, sorry. Her family's like, are they going to get to the crime? This is your moment. It's boring.
Like, okay, 5 stars, but we can change it.
Yeah, I know, right? 3. During one of these arguments, I stormed off to my room for a good old teenage sulk. Fast forward 30 minutes, and my sister goes up to her room and finds her ornamental water sprayer smashed on her bedroom floor. Side note, she'd bought this blue glass water sprayer to water her plants the week before, and she was insanely proud of it. My whole family is convinced I was the guilty party, and still to this day, it's a point of contention. Oh, no. I swear I did not do it. Please help vindicate me by solving this
Okay,
crime.
We need to know.
I know exactly what happened.
Go on. Okay.
The other twin did it.
And framed
her. Yeah. Just to cement her favoritism.
That's a dark answer, but
it's conspiracy.
It's so simple.
It's when a government, like, you know, when Russians blow up a flat and say, oh, it was the Chechnyans.
It was your enemy that did that. Shit. Okay.
Either that or it was a ghost. That's my two theories.
I was going to say a cat did it.
But do they have a cat?
There's cats in this home. Well, this is it. We don't have this information. Yeah. So my theory is not watertight.
Joe, so deep was my bias when I read this that just didn't even cross my mind. That is so insightful.
Yeah, that's
the
interesting.
Irony, the
irony. I don't know, I'm very cynical.
You began this episode apologizing for your mental capacity. I mean, it's just, yeah. to be a woman and just deficit thinking is rife, and we must.
Do you know what anyway. I think might have happened? Is I think that the twin that got the sprayer broken, I think she had said somewhere near Christmas, oh, I really like that house plant, really like that. And then at Christmas, she'd been given this fucking thing, this sprayer, instead of a Sega Mega Drive or something. And she was so annoyed. You know when you show interest in something at Christmas, and you're like,
oh, you like that.
I'm going to be given plants. What have I done? Yeah, and so she wanted to cement. Do you know what? Emotionally, I can't connect plants anymore.
Interesting.
So I think you're right. I think it was her. And she was like, I can get this on my sister.
I grew up in a jungle of siblings. Seriously.
How many did you have?
Well, I'm one of four. And I had, oh my God, the outright war we waged on each other for years and years and years. I'm telling you, I want that older twin's alibi.
Yeah.
I mean, what feels really great is that we've broken up at least one family.
Yeah. Well, they needed to know.
Episode. We've caused.
I mean, they can move on now in a clean way.
They've got to kick that perfect one off her perch and just all face the facts.
You've raised one good, one evil. We've identified and isolated the evil one.
Yeah. This feature is getting more and more interesting.
Oh my God. I know some of it is the Sauvignon Blanc, but man, this has been a hell of a good time.
Yay.
So we have just enough time to ask Joe, what are you up to other than isolation and wearing fabulous jumpers that I hope we got a screenshot of. Is there anything that you would like to plug? Tell us
about
stuff you've got coming up.
Well, you know, my team and I are working our nuts off in self-isolation, also producing a weekly magazine, New Magazine. Every Sunday it comes out.
Yeah.
And my pod husband and I, James Williams, have got Is It Just Me, the podcast, where we talk to a celebrity every week and ask things like, you know, should you hate someone just because they've got coloured toilet paper instead of white toilet paper? So,
and should you? What was the answer?
Yeah, totally.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Particularly if it's scented, because apparently that dries out your anal glands.
Well, I mean, if you're going to have scented toilet paper, you're going to also need the money for the canister. But
it's a trade.
Yes, come on, people. Think it through.
If you're looking for highbrow, don't come to me.
No, this sounds perfect for me. Where can we find this?
All the usual platforms.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
We can find you. Oh, Joe, I just think this has been.
I can't tell you how much I've enjoyed it.
Thank you so much.
We've been drunk women solving crime.
My auntie Pat solved it, but you know.
Yes, auntie Pat. Yes.
Drunk Women Solving Crime is produced by Amanda Redman with music by The Lion and the Wolf. You can follow us on Twitter at Drunk Women Pod and on Facebook and Instagram at Drunk Women Solving Crime. And please review us on Apple Podcasts. Also, if you've got a petty crime you want us to solve, then please write it in that review and we'll solve it. Thank you so much to Acast for hosting us, and thank you for listening.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.